Well, good morning and welcome to Ask the Chief on WTOP Radio. For the full hour, we're joined by D.C. Police Chief Kathy Lanier. You can be a part of the discussion by calling us at any point during the hour, 877-336-1035. The number again, 877-336-1035. Email us by going to WTOP.com. Now, here's WTOP's Mark Seagraves.
Well, Chief, thanks. We appreciate you coming in every month as you do regularly, so we very much appreciate that. Last month you were here, we talked about this, but you couldn't talk about it because the case was ongoing. Now, there's been a verdict in the Robert Wan trial. The three defendants were all found not guilty on all charges of obstruction of justice, tampering with evidence, conspiracy. This dates back to the 2006 stabbing death in DuPont Circle of Robert Wan. No one was actually ever charged with that murder. First, your reaction to the verdict.
Well, you know, I didn't get a chance to watch or read, follow up all the details on what went on in the courtroom, but I did try and read as much of it as I could as it came out. And it looked to me like there was a real tough decision there in the end, and everybody kind of speculated which way it was going to go. Could have gone either way. But, you know, I have to commend Glenn Kirshner and his team.
He's the U.S. attorney.
From the U.S. attorney's office, because to take that case, as complex as it was, and move forward, I think they did a great job. And, you know, the outcome is what it is, but we still have a murder investigation.
Well, let me ask you about it, because the judge said in no uncertain terms she didn't believe the defendant's story that an unknown intruder came into the house, stabbed this man to death in their guest bedroom, and then left without being seen or leaving a trace behind. She said, again, in no uncertain terms, that she believes that one or all three of the defendants know what actually happened to Robert Wan. But they're just, as you said, not enough evidence to convict on those charges.
Beyond a reasonable doubt.
So now what happens as far as your investigation of this crime? Where do the police go from here?
Well, it continues. We work with the U.S. Attorney's Office. That investigation has been ongoing from the beginning. This is just one piece of it. And, you know, beyond that, I guess I'm a little restricted to what I can say, but it's going to continue to go on.
So is this a cold case? Is this an ongoing and open homicide investigation? And do you think we'll ever know who murdered Robert Wan?
Well, I hope so. I mean, I really do hope so. And I think, it's, you know, a lot of people think as time passes that we'll, you know, more time passes that the cases won't be closed. But we've shown that we've closed cases 12, 15, 17 years old in the last few years. So I'm hoping that as we go forward, we will eventually find out who did this.
I know you talked to a lot of families of victims. Have you talked to Mrs. Wan about this?
I have not.
But it is an open investigation. The homicide portion is still an open investigation.
Open and very active.
You know, what the defense said during the trial was they criticized your detectives. They played the interrogation videotape. And they said they made basically the case that once your detectives learned that these three men were all gay, the defendants were all gay in a committed three-way relationship, when they found, you know, they were into some S&M in bondage and they found that kind of apparatus. And once they found that, once your detectives saw that for them it was case closed. They stopped looking for other suspects and they focused solely on these three men and nothing else.
Well, I know better than that. Personally, I know better than that. I know enough about the detectives and about this investigation to say unequivocally that's not true.
They even went, I think they walked right up to saying that, you know, that this was kind of a homophobic reaction on the part of your detectives.
Of course, the defense is going to use a lot of different tactics. But again, I know the detectives, I know the case, and I can say unequivocally that's not true.
We have Kathy Lanier, the chief of the D.C. Police Department, for the entire hour. We're going to talk about everything when we get back. We're going to talk about 4th of July and what everybody can expect as far as traffic, bridges, closure, security. You want to give us a little tease right now? Bridges, open or closed?
Yeah. We'll talk when we get back.
We'll talk after traffic and weather on the 8th.
We're back with D.C. Police Chief Kathy Lanier. This is Ask the Chief on WTOP Radio, taking your phone calls and emails. The number to dial, 877-336-1035. That's 877-336-1035. Email us your question by going to WTOP.com. Once again, WTOP's Mark Seagraves.
Sorry about that, Mark. Chief, one final question on the Robert Wan case. During the trial, again, there were other criticisms of your department, how they investigated this case, and things about, you know, that maybe the victim's BlackBerry was released back to his employer, his family too soon before his final messages could have been tracked down to get a timeline. And I'm just wondering, after a case like this, is there an after-action review that you guys do to kind of go back in and lessons learned from cases like this?
There's ongoing case reviews in every investigative unit, not just homicide. There are different layers of case reviews that are done all the way up to the level of the chief of police. We do TOPS reviews where we review cases, first line supervisor, manager, all the way up to my level. And of course, there's after actions on everything that we do. But I think the most important part is those case reviews during the investigation that go on. And that's where we catch things that and it's kind of a way to go back and say, have we missed anything? And what do we need to do to go back and correct
that?
In the
Juan case, looking back, do you think you missed anything?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to comment on that. I haven't sat down and gone through everything in the Juan case. And we do still have the ongoing murder investigation, so I'm not prepared to say that we missed anything, no.
Let's look at 4th of July. Obviously, people are already making plans. Julie Wright wants people to start leaving now for the mall.
Thank you, Julie.
what can you tell us, first of all, as far as the bridges? This is always, a big topic. Will they be open? Will they be closed to traffic during the fireworks?
Well, they're not going to be shut down by police. Let me say that. I'm not going to close all the bridges before the events. But what typically happens and what we have not allowed to happen in the past couple of years is that the bridges are shut down by people. I mean, people park along the bridges, they abandon their cars, and then another line of cars or whoever's on the bridge when the fireworks start just stop and get out and watch the fireworks.
You understand that it's hard not to stop.
Yeah, I don't know how they do that plan to be right in the middle of the bridge when the fireworks first started, like 9:06. but talented people that always can get themselves right on the bridge. So what we've been doing the past few years is we keep the tow trucks very visible on either side of the bridge to let you know don't park on the bridge. That helps a lot so you don't have the double parking, and it helps us to keep traffic moving. So the plan is that the bridge will not be shut down by motorists or anything else during the
How about pedestrians? What can they do as far as the bridges? Are they allowed to walk out onto the bridges, hang out there for the fireworks?
You can cross on the bridges, but I'm not sure which bridges actually have places where you can stand, but there typically are people standing along the bridge.
And that, as long as they're on the sidewalk portion
Correct.
Of the bridge, that's okay. Pedestrians in the road, I guess you discourage.
Yeah, that's frowned upon.
Okay, now let's talk about the roads in the city. First, coming into the city, what can people expect as far as lanes, traffic, road closures, anything like that?
Well, I have 3 pages of parking restrictions and road closures and everything here. Typically, what I tell people is because you have 3 or 4 parades that go on during the day, just be mindful that starting around 11 o'clock, you've got parades in Palisades, Capitol Hill, and then the major parade downtown around the mall on Constitution Avenue. After all of those parades go off, you have the Folklife Festival going on in the mall. Then you have concerts going on at the Capitol. So it's very, very busy. And during the course of the day, different parking restrictions and different traffic closures will take place, in particularly around the mall. That's the most impacted area of the city. I encourage everybody who can take public transportation to take public transportation. And I discourage people, and it happens every year, like 2 hours before the fireworks, everybody shows up at the same time and tries to get through the checkpoints and, plan ahead a little bit. Between 7 and 9, there's this flood of people and they all jam up, trying to get through.
So there will be the same checkpoints trying to access them all on foot. You'll have to go through some kind of a perimeter.
Yes, from 14th Street West. So you just plan ahead a little bit. And there's plenty of stuff on the website. DDOT has all the closures and parking restrictions on their website. But don't get there at the last minute and hope to make it through if you're trying to get into a security area.
And I guess some of the obvious, what can you bring downtown? What can't you bring downtown?
Well, no alcohol, no, fireworks. Please don't bring fireworks and sit in the crowd thinking you could shoot your own fireworks off. Little portable grills, coolers and things like that, and are subject to inspection if you're going into a secure area. So just use good common sense. That's all.
And now everybody will want to leave at the exact same time. You know that. So talk about getting out of town.
Well, I know DDOT is working on doing another Operation Fast Forward. That's a way for us to exercise the opening of the emergency evacuation routes. You'd be amazed at how smoothly that goes. The most difficult part for the within about 45 minutes, we see the bulk of people are out of there and kind of dispersed. But we just have to remind drivers, if you're pulling out of a parking garage or something like that, you have to yield to the pedestrians. And there's going to be a lot of them. When the fireworks are over, you're right, everybody leaves at the same time. And there's a flood of people trying to go up, you know, north on the, you know, 15th Street, 17th Street, you know, all the way down along the mall. And just if you're in a car, be patient, because those pedestrians have to get to the subways and get to their cars.
But you have a lot of pedestrians who aren't crossing at crosswalks. Is there going to be any effort to try to keep people
We really do try, but my gosh, that's a challenge. I mean, I've been doing this for 20 years. I've worked every 4th of July for 20 years, and I can tell you, it's sometimes best to just get the crowd out as quickly as you possibly can, and they do evacuate pretty quickly, and then move things along. But I can't imagine trying to restrict them to just intersections.
You know, some of the frustration with drivers is that they're in their cars, the lights change, there's not always an officer or traffic control officer in the intersection. And the pedestrian group think is, hey, we just keep going. The cars aren't going to run us
over. We outnumber them, right?
That's right. So,
and they do. But you know what? That flood of people really lasts 10 minutes tops until they're out and dispersed far enough away from the mall so that their traffic starts moving pretty regularly. I mean, you have to be patient. This is the 4th of July. You get all these people together to see the events. Everybody just be patient.
And then just quickly, security. Obviously, this is a target-rich environment, as they say. I don't believe there's ever been an incident down there of a terrorist type or anything like that. What are you doing to plan for that?
Well, as we always do, we've had regular meetings with all of the other law enforcement agencies. We've been doing regular weekly meetings at the chief level with the chief of the Capitol Police, Park Police, FBI, Secret Service. We meet every week and talk extensively about our plans. I would just say that we have a very strong security posture through all of the law enforcement agencies and a very, I'd say, a significant presence here in the city.
We are back with your calls and emails for D.C. Police Chief Kathy Lanier right after traffic and weather on the 8th.
This is Ask the Chief on WTOP Radio. D.C. Police Chief Kathy Lanier is with us, taking your phone calls at 877-336-1035. That's 877-336-1035. If you've got a question by email, you can send that in at WTOP.com. Here's WTOP's Mark Seagraves.
And let's get to the phones. Let's go to Lita, who is calling us from Prince George's County. Go ahead, Lita. You're on with the chief.
Yes, chief. Thank you for taking my call. I was very concerned to learn about the police response to the incident at the mosque. It seems that the women wanted to merely worship alongside the men, and it must not be something that they allow. But why were the police called? And secondly, what was their response? It seems that they attempted to lead the women away. Is that their responsibility? I'll be very interested to hear what you have to say.
Let me just brief our listeners if they're not up to speed, because I'll admit I was not up to speed on this. Women and men pray in separate sections of mosques, and some women have tried to, for lack of a better term, infiltrate the male side of the mosque during prayers, and they are asked to leave. And I guess what happens is when they do not leave peacefully, when first asked, the mosque then calls the police for help.
Yeah,
is that right,
that's
Chief?
Correct. That's correct. And there's been a lot of misinformation put out there about this. But, you know, the laws are very clear for us. And I think in the instances that have occurred, and it's been one or two, if the person who's responsible, lawfully in charge of the property, requests police to have somebody barred from or leave the property, we have to do that. We have to, you know, if the owner expresses a wish for somebody to leave the property that they're in control of, we have to do that. And or if they bar somebody from the property, there actually is laws on the books about disrupting a religious service. And in this case, if the person legally in charge of the property says that this activity is disrupting a religious service, and they would like to have people leave the property, we have gone and asked them to leave the property. We make no attempts to separate males from females and where they worship. You know, that's really none of our concern. Our concern is that we were asked to respond by the person in charge of private property and asked to have someone who was disrupting a service leave the building.
Chief, has anybody been arrested so far in any of these incidences?
No.
And
no.
Do they all leave peacefully? Or anybody, I mean, I don't want to use the word roughed up, but do you guys ever have to actually physically remove anybody from a mosque?
No, we've had no circumstances like that.
Okay, Chief, let me ask you something that's been in the news a lot lately, and that is slug lines. And these are places where commuters who are leaving town in the evening, in the district they're leaving, they have them coming into town also, but the ones we're talking about, people mostly around 14th Street downtown in the federal enclave, who are driving alone home, who want to pick up a passenger who's commuting their way so that they can ride in the HOV lanes. It seems like a pretty reasonable way to reduce the number of cars that come into town every day. But there have been reports that your officers have now started to ticket the cars because they're pulling over, I guess, along 14th Street, where they're not allowed to stop during rush hour to pick these passengers up. And that has angered the slug community. The greatest headline on this was DCS, you're pouring salt on the slug
Slugs,
lines.
Yes, I know. I don't think anybody disagrees that finding a reasonable way for carpoolers to get in and out of the city is a good thing for everybody involved. And the reports that we've recently started enforcing, no stopping along the slug lines, just completely false. I actually pulled, and I can only pull by category of ticket, but when this allegation surfaced, I pulled by the category of no stopping tickets written citywide by all law enforcement agencies combined. There are roughly between 200 and 300 of those tickets written a month by every police agency combined in this city. And I don't know how many of them are written on 14th Street. That's citywide. So that would indicate to me that we're not targeting the slug line, or there'd be a lot more.
But has there been an uptick? Were you able to determine whether
there's
number?
Absolutely not. I think the perception of the uptick is because there was attention brought to the congestion around the mall by the letter that was sent to the city from the Hill.
And Senator Webb from Virginia.
Right after that letter came out, the next day this allegation surfaced. And so I think that's probably what it is. I think that the only time that our officers will actually write tickets for that is if they observe a situation that is creating congestion or is creating a safety hazard. So we don't go out looking for slug lines or sluggers or whatever.
I don't want to put words in your mouth, but you want your officers to exercise some judicial discretion.
Absolutely.
I'm guessing on these.
And they're pretty busy doing other stuff. I mean, we really have a whole lot of time to just go focus on the slug line because we're pretty busy.
I know you don't make the laws, but are there conversations? Have you talked to anyone down in the D.C. Council about changing the law or doing something so as to accommodate mm-hmm. these slug lines?
Yeah, I know Gabe Klein from DDOT is like I am, is open to any options we can come up with and finding a way to make this carpooling successful and safe. And I don't think anybody in the city opposes that, but I don't know if there's any legislative thing. Legislation is really not the answer. It's finding a way to do it safely or a place to do it. And we really wouldn't need the legislation.
Let's get back to the phones. We have Amy calling from Germantown. Amy, you're on with the chief.
Hello, chief. I just wanted to comment on what a positive spin you put on every question this guy has given you. And, your managerial technique sounds fantastic, just sensible. I don't get into the district, so I don't know how it's all working out on the streets, but listening to you on the radio, you just seem like the perfect person for that job, and what a gift you have to have a positive, sensible perspective on everything.
Well, thank you.
Maybe you can run for office or something. We need more people like you. I don't know where you got that skill, but it really is refreshing, and it's great to hear on the radio of really made me feel confident that they've got some good leadership down there.
All right, enough of those calls. Okay,
thank you, Amy. And Mark agrees with you.
Chief, I will just quickly say, I know you don't like the political questions, but 70% approval rate, highest approval rate in the city. Any thoughts of running for office ever? Would you ever consider something like that?
Absolutely, positively not. You know, I love what I do, and I think the approval rating that came out for me in the city was a reflection of what my department does, and I'm fortunate to be there.
We're back with After Traffic and Weather on the 8s.
This just in to the WTOP Newsroom.
Traffic and weather coming up. First word of mandatory water restrictions in the area. If you're a WSSC customer, we're being told that you will need to restrict your water use effective immediately. John White with the Washington Suburban Sanitary Commission says a fiber optic system picked up a possible problem in a 96-inch main in Potomac. Now, in order to get to that problem, they'll have to restrict water flow, and that will affect customers in Montgomery and Prince George's counties. That means that you need to stop all outdoor water use immediately. No watering of lawns, no washing cars, no topping off swimming pools. Use water only as needed. That means limited use in flushing toilets, limited use of dishwashers and washing machines, do full loads only, as necessary. These restrictions are in place immediately, and they are expected to last through the long 4th of July weekend for approximately 4 days. These are mandatory, and you will be cited if you ignore the water restrictions. We have more details at our website, WTOP.com. Back with more of Ask the Chief on WTOP Radio with Metropolitan Police Chief Kathy Lanier. Taking your phone calls at 877-336-1035. That's 877-336-1035. You can email us at WTOP.com. Once again, Mark Seagraves.
Chief, let me ask you something that we deal with here in the District of Columbia, probably more than any other community in the country, I think, and that is suspicious packages. And anybody who was in traffic yesterday or even this morning on Connecticut Avenue knows that whenever somebody, you know, leaves their diaper bag at the wrong bus stop,
You're oversimplifying,
Mark. I realize that. But traffic is shut down. Sometimes, as you said, I think yesterday, for 5 hours for this. So we understand security needs, but there's got to be a balance here. So tell us about striking that balance.
You know, and the balance for us is we don't take anything for granted in the lives of our bomb technicians and everybody around those packages are not worth foregoing procedures that we have in place. We do try and balance it by making sure, like this morning and like yesterday, we try and make sure that the shutdown area is appropriate for the type of package that we're dealing with and the safety precautions put around that. We do try and accommodate those closures by asking traffic control officers from DDOT to come and help us along with district officers direct traffic around the shutdown area. So we try and be as reasonable as possible, but I don't think there's any room for error here. And we don't, you know, I kind of joked with you as oversimplifying it, but we don't handle, you know, an abandoned diaper bag, next to a daycare the way we would handle, you know, a large suitcase in the middle of a entryway to a, you know, maybe some critical infrastructure or a hotel, you know, it's something that stands out. So everything's handled a little bit differently. But we can't take people's lives for granted.
When was the last time a suspicious package in the district turned out to be a bomb or something of a threat?
I know we have had a couple incidences in the past, probably 6 or 7 years where we've had pipe bombs, and I don't know the exact date, but you know, we have just as much concern for hoax devices, and hoax devices to us are the equivalent of finding an actual device because in many cases they're pretty sophisticated. So the last time we actually had a detonated device or a live device, I mean, I don't know the date, but I know there has been a few in the past 5, 6 years.
But hoax devices, you were telling me these are things that people are intentionally putting out there that look very much like they could be a real bomb.
Yes. That's happened. In fact, we had an extensive case back in, I think it was 2005 or 2006, where there was multiple hoax devices placed around the city, around critical infrastructure and transportation sites. A caller who kept calling in and telling us about bombs going to go off. So that does happen periodically, and we actually will prosecute. That's a federal violation of federal law.
Let's get back to the phones. We have Deborah calling in from Fairfax. Deborah, you're on with the chief.
Yes, good morning.
Hi, Deborah.
I started my career in police work in 79, so I'm about a generation behind you. I'd like to address three of your initiatives, if I may.
Sure.
First, your IHOD. I know you've taken a lot of criticism on that from the idiomatic-minded critics, and I have to tell you that starting in Prince George's County in 79, this group hated that group, who hated the other group, and everybody hated the cops. So what we began doing is parking our cruisers in the residential areas and just walking up and down the street and talking to people. And we found that talking to people about gardening or petting the dog or playing Frisbee with the kids, after a while, it began to open things up, open up communications. There's a lot of historical and empirical proof to show that grassroots movements in police work help. And I think your critics will come to see that eventually.
I hope so.
I do, too.
Chief, let's talk. She said I think she means all hands on deck. So tell me what we can expect going into the summer as far as on hands on deck.
All hands on deck. We've already had one for the summer. We have them planned throughout the summer. And the communities love the all hands on deck. And I know there's some critics. And
the union's not too thrilled.
Well, but the union's point is not so much they mind going out and doing all hands on deck.
It's scheduling.
Well, the scheduling's done well in advance. They just would like to be paid overtime for it. And there is no overtime involved. You know, it's pre-planned and you work your 40
hours.
But
you're still in, where are you as far as this, is it in arbitration right now, the dispute between you and the union?
There's an appeal going on now, and I'm not sure what the next, what level that is. We're appealing the arbiter's decision.
And do you have another, when is the next all hands on deck scheduled for?
July. It's going to be in July.
Can you give us do you know which week? Is it a weekend, I'm guessing?
Yeah, it's the third week in July.
And then, you know, schools are all out now. The kids are out on the streets and whatnot. Talk to us a little bit about curfews and policing the juvenile offenders who are out there.
Well, we're trying to add as many layers to the issue with kids and especially in the summertime as we possibly can. So we've always had curfews, and the curfew during the school year, or all up until July 1st, is 11 p.m., and then starting in July and August, it is 12 p.m., and it's 12 p.m. throughout the week when they're out of school, so July and August. We've always had curfew enforcement, but we have set up this year curfew centers where we're going to actually, when we pick up kids, they'll go to a curfew center, and we can actually evaluate. A parent or guardian will have to come and pick them up. But in some cases, we pick up kids that are very young, out very late at night. And in those cases, it gives us an opportunity to see if there's some other intervention that's needed in the home. And we actually picked up I think it was a 5-year-old out after curfew hours. And I think it was last summer. And in cases like that, there probably needs to be some intervention by some other social service agency. So we're trying to have a little bit more holistic approach to this. So we have the curfew center set up this year. So all curfews that are violators picked up will go there. We'll call parents or guardians to come up. Any curfew violator under the age of 12 who we can't track down or locate, a parent or guardian, will go to CFSA.
Now, just quickly, we're up against traffic and weather, but when you pick up a juvenile during the curfew, do you do a check to see if this person is possibly absconded from a DYRS or a youth facility?
Always, yes.
You do that check. Mm-hmm. We're back with Chief Lanier and your calls and emails.
We're talking with D.C. Police Chief Kathy Lanier on Ask the Chief on WTOP Radio. If you've got a question for the chief, call us now at 877-336-1035, 877-336-1035. Email us at WTOP.com. Once again, Mark Seagraves.
Chief, we were just mentioning youth since the curfew and juvenile offenders and whatnot. And obviously, there's been a lot of news about juveniles who should have been in the custody of either the Department of Youth and Rehabilitative Services or court offenders or in jail somewhere, but had absconded. They don't escape. They abscond from these halfway houses and facilities. And some of them have now been rearrested and charged with murders. And it's, I think, 7 or 8 of them so far this year. The most notable case was the murder of the very popular school principal, Brian Betts, a few months ago. The question is for you, I think, what does your department do when notified that a juvenile has absconded from custody and is on the loose? Tommy Wells, a D.C. council member who oversees this issue on the council, says that your department shouldn't need a court order to go out and rearrest these juveniles. You should be able to just go out and do it. But there is some thought that, in fact, you do need a court order before you go out to try to apprehend or reapprehend these absconders. Tell us what your policy is and how it's working.
Well, as soon as we're notified, and that's one of the keys, we have to be notified. As soon as we're notified that a youth has absconded from a community-based facility, we initially take a missing persons report, which also means if they're contacted by law enforcement, we can pick them up as a missing person and return them to the group home or facility, the community-based facility they're in. But we do need a court order in order to pick them up for them to actually be charged for abscondence. And so I think that there is a need for the court order to pick them up. What becomes difficult is if they've absconded from a group home or a group facility and they are located then, say, at their family's home without a court order, we're not going to go in and forcefully take them out of their family's home. Because remember, they've absconded from a group home. So the court order is critically important, and that's what DYRS is, their policy is they notify us immediately, and within an hour they're working on getting the custody order. And
any numbers, how many times you are called to respond to an absconded juvenile?
Well, we take an awful lot of missing persons reports. I think there's a larger issue of people who abscond from the group home or group facility and then come back. And as soon as they don't come back when they're supposed to, we're notified. We take the missing persons report, but then they'll return a day or two later, and we have to cancel the missing person all before a custody order is ever issued. So there's a pretty good number.
Let me ask you, Chief, about crime statistics. Mayor Fenty is on the campaign trail making a big deal that crime statistics, the crime is down citywide over the past few years. Your website would seem to indicate the same thing when you go on the very comprehensive crime statistics page.
Designed just for you.
Very user-friendly. But Chris Bauman with the union, it tells a different story. And he says that if you go and look at the FBI numbers, the most recent numbers, I believe, are for 2008, they contradict your numbers, and they show that crime is actually either up over the past few years, or
it actually
at least
shows crime is in way better shape than ours does.
Well, so are the FBI numbers different than the numbers that are posted on your website?
Absolutely, they are. They are in every jurisdiction. I know it's this has been this way since I believe 1921 or whenever the UCR numbers were created, because the laws are different in every jurisdiction. There's no one universal way to capture crime across the United States. So what the FBI UCR numbers does, it attempts to come up with a set of crime categories, index crime categories, that everybody else, every jurisdiction in the United States, can lump all of our crime stats into. So what's considered a aggravated assault in one jurisdiction might be considered a simple assault in another jurisdiction. So,
well, for instance, you don't include simple assault in the district in your numbers for violent crimes.
Correct. Aggravated assault. So it's really complicated, but right on our website, we put both statistics up. If I was cheating or hiding something, I wouldn't put them both there. They're in our annual report. There's a statement right on there. And if you look at other major cities around the country, they all do the same thing.
So is crime up or down?
Crime is down, Mark.
But the FBI numbers, again.
The FBI numbers has a bigger crime reduction than the actual local numbers show you.
For what year are you talking
about? Last year.
For 2009. Well, those are just six-month preliminary numbers, as far as I can find on their website.
That's correct.
If you look at 2008, where you paint a picture of crime being down, they paint a crime being
right.
Up.
In 2008, it was the other way. But this year, and that's why I don't understand why he's raising the issue again this year. This year, the UCR shows, or for 2009, UCR shows us having a much greater crime reduction than what we're reporting. And if I was cheating, wouldn't I go with the UCR numbers that look better?
We're going to break for traffic and weather on the 8th. We're going to be right back with Ask the Chief.
Back with the final segment of Ask the Chief on WTOP with Metropolitan Police Chief Kathy Lanier. Taking your phone calls at 877-336-1035. Couple of lines open now at 877-336-1035. Once again, WTOP's Mark Seagraves.
Chief, let me be as delicate as I can about this next question. With all due respect, and every reporter in town, and I know you, have heard these rumors. And recently, Mayor Fenty addressed these rumors on another radio show. Whether or not there was marital problems and any chances of domestic violence at the Fenty household. He absolutely categorically denied this on the area. No evidence that this is true, but these rumors have been out there for some time. Recently, Kojo on another show, another radio station, talked about the fact, the rumors involving you, that when you were the commander at 4D, the district where the mayor lives, that you covered up incidences where police responded to his house for domestic calls. And so I just ask you to respond to those rumors about your involvement in this.
Yeah, actually those rumors surfaced, I believe, as soon as he began running for mayor. And they've been around ever since. And periodically they'll pop back up. But I can tell you, without any question, nobody in the Metropolitan Police Department would cover that up. Certainly I wouldn't cover that up as a district commander. And clearly, there's plenty of people who would like to report things like that about me or about the mayor. Somebody would have come forward with factual information about that if that had happened. But I think it's just all kind of – there's people out there like to start vicious rumors. They know which ones are the most damaging. And as soon as Mayor Fenty actually started running for mayor, this is when those things surfaced. And, you know, just sometimes we have to deal with that kind of craziness.
Let's get back to the phones. Brock is calling from the district. Brock, you're on with the chief. Go ahead.
First of all, I would like to, from my heart, commend you, Chief, on the job you're doing, because I can see that you are personally concerned with D.C. I'm a lifetime resident, and I can tell you're not faking. You really are concerned, and I want to thank you for that. I've been trying to get through for a long time, but I want to tell you that from my heart.
Thank you, Brock. I appreciate
you. Brock, did you have a question? Because we're right up against the clock.
I'm sorry. There was never nothing addressed about when the gun control, when we were allowed to have pistols in the D.C., the murder rate went down, lowest in 42 years. There were rumors expected it was going to be like Dodge City and we were going to start shooting one another. It never happened. I never heard anything addressed about that, and I was wondering why.
Chief, that's a good question. We're now into it where handguns are legal in the District of Columbia. We just saw the ruling in Chicago. What can you say as far as crime statistics? I mean, you say right here, crime is down, homicide is down. Mm-hmm. So how about it? Is that because people now have more guns?
Well, the only thing that you can really attribute to the change in gun laws, so there's so much misinformation out there. Remember now, you've always been able to register a gun in your home. It just had to be a long gun. It couldn't be a handgun. So the change in the law was that you can now register a handgun, but it's still only in your home. So the measure of what crime was impacted by the new law would be crime in the home, because you can't carry them on the street. So I would say if you want to look at what has been impacted by now allowing you to register a handgun in your home versus just a shotgun or a rifle, have burglaries gone down? Has there been less, you know, home invasions and things like that? Well, burglaries is actually one of the crimes that I have a slight uptick in. So I think there's a misperception that when the Heller decision came out that now everybody can just walk around the street with a handgun in their waistband, and that's just legally.
So you don't think there's legally a link between homicides down and guns being legal. What about the fact, is there any evidence that anyone has prevented a burglary or a violent crime by virtue of the fact that they had a gun in the house?
We have not had one single instance like that.
How about an accidental death from a gun in the house, an accidental shooting?
We've had several accidental shootings in the house, none with their legally registered firearms that I'm aware of, but we have had some suicides with legally registered firearms.
Chief, let's get back to the phones. I think the name is Mark, is on line 5. Go ahead. Are you there?
Mark?
Hello?
Hello?
Yeah, you're on with the chief.
This is one of Chief Lanier's 2D foot patrolmen. How you doing, Chief?
Hi, Mark.
Nah, this is Officer Fennell, man.
Oh, hey, Fennell.
How you doing, man?
We like when officers identify. Go ahead, sir.
Earlier, I was listening to the officer from PG County, you know, talk about the all hands on deck and, you know, the exposure that we have in the street. And I just wanted to, you know, point out, you know, your program, the Full Stride program, and, you know, the how successful it is and the accolades that we've been receiving from citizens and visitors as well.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, and you're one of the most popular ones out there.
All right. I don't know where all these plant calls are coming from, but Chief, let me get back to crime statistics. There's one point I wanted to talk about. Again, with crimes that are lumped into different statistics, sexual assault. If you take out misdemeanor sexual assaults from the equation and just take rape and aggressive sexual assaults. Are sexual assaults up in the district or down right now?
You know, I can't answer that question right now because I look at the category of sexual assault on my daily crime statistics. Well, I mean, can't have it broken out for me, but it includes all sexual assaults. So it's inappropriate touching.
I'm told there actually are internal documents that show.
Oh, there are. There are. I just don't have them with me. I don't know them off the top of my head.
But they show that in 7D, in the 7th district, sexual assault is actually up 300%.
I have to look, Mark.
But is it possible? And if it is, why wouldn't you tell the public that there is a such
I don't
a huge
have the
uptick?
Numbers. I can't sit here and answer a question. I don't have the numbers, too. I know sexual assaults as a whole are up. Citywide sexual assaults are up. And in a couple of districts, they're up, you know, double-digit percentages. But although I can break them out by the type and the category, you also have to look a little beyond that and to also how many of them are domestic. And the 7th District has the highest number of domestic violence assaults, domestic homicides, and domestic sexual assaults, bar none. So, you know, you can't just look at numbers and not do any analysis and use that as something to warn or scare people with. You got to kind of look at what the facts are. And I will look at that, and we'll talk about it when I come back.
D.C. Police Chief Kathy Lanier, we appreciate you coming in every month, Chief.
All right, Mark.